Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance live from the Kintec Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors. For over 50 years, visit them one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. It is a Canucks game day tonight. They take on the Edmonton Oilers. 6 o'clock start for this one in Edmonton. And, you know, we threw out off the top of the show there to the listeners, 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Is this season wearing on you? And not surprisingly, a lot of responses in the affirmative coming in. Trey Mack texts in, they may not be relegated to the AHL, but they've been relegated to the tablet at home. Most games aren't even entertaining. Can they manage to get more than 6 shots in the first period? Well, they did. They played really well in the first period on Saturday against the Oilers. Got a whole bunch of shots, way more than they normally get. But it's that lack of follow-up, of course, that continues to be the biggest issue for this team. Robert in Victoria says, I'm 45. I've witnessed everything with this team. It's not that I don't care anymore. It's that I'm just not affected. I am numb to the outcomes and have lost all hope with this team.
Comfortably numb.
That's Robert.
Rob Victoria. Has become.
Or uncomfortably numb. No. Doesn't sound too comfortable.
No, that's but also that's less psychedelic.
Yes, that's true. Nate from Comox says this season.
No one's going to the planetarium for a light show to hear that, Jamie.
Oh, man, the planetarium light show. What a blast. Nate from Comox texts in, this season has worn on me as well, Drancer. I've watched every game for the past decade at least, or since I started watching again at the beginning of the Benning era. What a time to jump on board. Why did that happen,
my
Nate?
My goodness,
what's
man?
The story there? It's like, you know what? 2011, not doing it for me. Jim Benning? All right, now I'm in.
What's your problem, dude?
Anyways, and he says, now I don't even watch the games. What's the point? This core is cooked. Everyone can see it. I think everyone just wants to see a team all pulling on the same rope. That's from Nate in Comox.
Well, and that's, you know, do you believe, does Canucks management come to a point where they believe that just the exhale effect of moving on serves you well? I mean, I come back to that Bills example, right? Where, you know, entering the season, their weapons were a big question mark and on and on. Well, they've looked better than ever.
Yep.
Right? The internal dynamic is better. The way, like, we all know this. We've all been part of teams at work or teams in far lower levels of sports. Like, it matters to be in a functional group, right? That has the right dynamics from a performance standpoint. We see it across pro sports. We see it across life. Like, that's human nature, man. So, you know, is there a world where you can lose this deal and still get better? I think the answer is yes.
And Jay in North Delta texted this in. You can't take it in the chin or on the chin in this deal just to save this season. You're moving an integral piece. You have to make sure you're making the right deal for years to come. That's from Jay in North Delta. And first of all, I don't think you do this deal in a hurry to save this season. Not necessarily. Like, yeah, could there be that exhale effect you're talking about and, you know, addition by subtraction and all that, and you go on a little bit of a run? Yeah, absolutely. But I'm also not sitting here and thinking you're going to morph into a Stanley Cup contender because you traded JT Miller. I get, okay, look, you want to get the best assets possible, so maybe you flip them or maybe they're the pieces that help you going forward, all of that. But you also have to be realistic about the signals the rest of the league is sending you. If a deal like the you know, pie in the sky fantasy best case scenario one that a lot of fans were hoping for before we started to get more reports on this, if that was in the offing, if that was going to be on the table closer to the trade deadline or, you know, in the summer, I think you'd be seeing way more teams interested now than you are. You'd be seeing way more legitimate offers now than you are. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, value can fluctuate based on the calendar and all of that, but generally it's not night and day differences. Well, and that's what we'd be talking about here.
Not without a significant change like a new contract or, yes, you know, something like that. Like,
or an injury or something, yeah.
Yeah, or a player who doesn't have a huge track record or something like that. Like, we all know, the whole league knows what JT Miller is, and they know he's a really, really good player whose performance can be a little bit volatile. And maybe whose personality can be too, right? So you end up with sort of where you're at, which is, look, this guy is going to be probably a really, really good player for at least the first 2 years of this deal, but there's a significant amount of downside risk attached to acquiring the full contract. This isn't any different from the dynamic we were talking about when the Canucks signed it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting that his season last year, the fact that he put together such an incredible two-way campaign, I would have thought that might have increased his trade value somewhat, or like buttressed it a little bit differently. Buttress. But that doesn't seem to have been the case.
But also, if you were trying to trade him at the draft last year, it might have.
Yeah, you're right.
You know what I mean? But now there's more games under, there's a newer sample size.
Yes.
For teams to look at.
And new leverage based on, you know, sort of where the Canucks are positioned and what they clearly feel is needed to improve this team, which appears to be a fresh start personality-wise or chemistry-wise in that locker room.
Yeah, so look, again, it's all comes down to how much of a possibility do you think, what are the percentages, you know, what's the percentage you think that a better deal is going to be out there? And negotiations, Jim Rutherford knows way better than me how to handle. As you said, how many guys have done this more, done things like this more, been in these staring contests, been in these tough negotiations than Jim Rutherford? So he's very well suited. He's very qualified to handle this. The fear for me is that we've been here before where the reporting after the fact is, you know, well, the Canucks listened on JT Miller, but the value just wasn't there. Teams around the league just they didn't offer the value that the Canucks think this player is worth. And I do think you might have to start adjusting that value a little bit to get a deal done and move forward as a franchise, move forward as a team. Mark the Mechanic texts in, how about take what you can get from Miller, hopefully get some cap space and move on. This core has an issue. Shake it up. That's Mark the Mechanic. That's part of it. That's absolutely part of it. Get some flexibility. See what else you can do with the assets you get back. Know where you're going. Know what you have to work with in terms of cap space going forward.
I mean, if this is one where, honestly, whatever your take is, I think you're right. You know, it's one of those odd ones. Like, I often say that the season is long enough that every take has its moment in the sun.
Yep.
Right? But this is one where truly, you know, if your point is JT Miller is way too good a player, you know, now the one person who framed it as like, don't make this trade to save this season, I kind of disagree with that just from the perspective of, well, trading JT Miller makes you worse. Like, regardless of whether things are fundamentally broken, the moment you trade JT Miller, your playoff chances take a hit.
Yep.
In practice, you know what I mean? Like, saving this season would be like, guys, work it out. We're going to leg it through and see what we can, you know, figure out as a group. And we're not the most all on the same page group, but we still have an awful lot of talent and no one's going to want to see us in the first round. I mean, most teams would rather see the Canucks than the other seven teams in the West that are going to make the playoffs, but nonetheless, just bear with me. But I understand that, like, from a value management standpoint, trying to wait this out, or at least trying to wait this out long enough that you're seen to be credible when you tell teams we're in no rush to do this, that might help you get 25 instead of, or sorry, let's go with 60 instead of 50 cents on the dollar. Now, my answer would be, if you're really dealing with tectonic stuff, like our team can't compete because there's something off, there's something amiss with the group, then I think worrying too much about 10 cents is missing the big picture.
That's where I'm at.
But I understand the point. Like, I understand the notion that JT Miller is too good to be tossed overboard. The biznasty advice, the biznasty plan. You can't give this guy away for a bad return. What are we talking about? It's JT Miller. He's a 100-point center who showed last year just how good he can look when he's completely dialed as a two-way piece. I actually think that's a perfectly fair point of view. And if your team, hey, just get this done, move forward, I also think that's completely fair. This is one of those rare ones, Jamie. I hate, like, there's nothing I hate hearing more than And
Satyar Shah's catchphrase.
All apologies to Satyar Shah for saying this. The both things can be true at once. It's like, no, have a take. But I actually think in this case,
that is a take. Anyways,
what?
It is a take that both things can be true at once. That's a take.
That's a take like King Solomon had a take. Decide. And you like my preference, and because even now I'm congenitally unable to actually follow my own advice here. I think you move forward as quickly as you can. I think you rip the Band-Aid off. Personally, I think that's the right approach at this point. But I can totally see, and I think it's fair. Usually I'll be like, no, that's wrong. Yes. One side is wrong. I do not feel strongly about this one. This one is too complicated for I think there to be like one right answer.
Yeah. I guess, and if you're trying to, okay, if you're in that position as an executive, right, if you're Jim Rutherford, and I'm sure there's competing opinions in Canucks management, and you're trying to balance the rip the Band-Aid off versus not giving a player, a really good player, away for nothing and not getting screwed in a trade, you know, even if you understand you're going to lose the deal, you don't want to lose it horrifically. So if you're trying to thread that needle, maybe you can't worry about the difference between 60 cents on the dollar and 50 cents on the dollar, but you can still worry about the difference between like 10 cents on the dollar and 50 cents on the dollar. You know what I mean? Like, even I'm not sitting here saying, oh, just trade him for a 7th round pick. Obviously that's ridiculous. There has to be more in good that goes into it than that. And it really just comes down to Jim Rutherford's read on which teams are serious, which teams could be serious if you hold in the future, how much holding can help your leverage, and how much better the offers are going to get. But I think everyone just needs to lower the bar, maybe a little bit, and recognize also the value that comes from having the deal done and the potential harm that comes from not doing the deal. I think that's an underrated part of this as well. I think we tend to talk about the wait and hope that they get better plan as kind of risk-free. But one, there's risk that the deals don't get any better. There's risk that the player goes to play for his country at the Four Nations and gets injured, and then you're potentially really in trouble. There's risk that the toll that this is taking on the team right now adds up, and that it's not as easy then as just trade the player and everyone will be fine and everyone will be happy if you keep putting your team, putting the organization through this. So again, that's not to say that it's clearly the right answer. You just have to give them away right now, pick up the phone and get the deal done. But there are risks. There are serious risks, I think, to holding the player for a significant amount of time, being in this situation for a significant amount of time. And I think there's benefits to getting the deal done early as well, even if you don't necessarily win the trade, or, you know, even if you lose the trade pretty significantly at the time that the deal is done. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Jeremy says the Canucks will totally blow the trade just like they did with the Bo Horvat trade. I don't think they blew the Bo Horvat trade. That was not a home run, but that's the nature of trading a really good player. You're not necessarily going to hit a home run. But if you look at that, yeah, I don't like the Anthony Beauvillier part didn't make a ton of sense, and eventually you move him in as a cap dump. But Aturatu was a perfectly reasonable prospect to take back, and then you flip the asset, the first round pick, for Philip Ronick. So again, not a home run, not a legendary trade or anything, but I don't think they blew the Bo Horvat trade. And if anything, I think that gives you kind of a template to follow for this one, where it's like, okay, let's get some assets in the door and then figure out what our next step is and what else we can do with them. Somebody else texted, I was just trying to find it in the inbox. Here it is, unsigned here, but says, we're going down the road where management realizes that the value for Pettersson is way higher and they'll trade him instead of Miller. Horvat 2.0. I have heard that people have said, you know, Elias Pettersson's still out there. I think Rick Dhaliwal saying Elias Pettersson's name is still out there. So theoretically, could that be possible? But once you get this publicly close, way closer, way more public than it ever was with the idea of trading JT Miller before, to pivot and then turn around and move from Elias Pettersson instead and try to go forward with JT Miller would be extraordinarily difficult.
Yeah, it would be. I could see it, though. I mean, I was told this weekend, and Dhaliwal and I included it in our What We're Hearing piece, that, like, until one is done,
The possibility
exists.
Yeah.
And, you know, arguably this already happened. Right? Arguably this is basically what happened with Horvat and Miller, where Miller was very available at the 2022 NHL draft in Montreal. Club, you know, there was that scuttled Islanders deal, right? The rumored Islanders deal that fell through. We never really got the story of what exactly that looked like. And Canucks don't end up doing it. negotiations with Bo Horvat are slow skating over the course of the summer. Club changes direction suddenly around Labor Day and signs JT Miller. So it wouldn't be unprecedented for the club to gauge the market on JT Miller, find it wanting relative to how high they are on a very unique, very good player, and then change directions. Here's my problem with this, though. And I actually think this matches some level of organizational thinking.
Okay.
It's just a simple thought exercise. We're going to use our common sense here.
Ooh.
Which, you know, we're not...
A rarity on this show.
We're not prone to doing on this show. But... what is true about a trade involving either Miller or Pettersson?
You're getting worse.
You're getting worse. How long do you would you expect it to take you to take what you get from a Miller or Pettersson deal, put it to good use, invest, buy, whatever, and then be as talented? How long would it take you to dig out of the hole you will create in making that trade?
Like, is there a world where you could... some trade comes along and you could do it by next year, I guess, but probably not.
I would say 18 months.
Yeah. So you're probably looking at not the beginning of next year, but the year after that.
Or maybe like at the deadline next year.
Sure, sure.
If you're sharp enough about exactly how you handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That, you know, 12 to 18 months, I think, is a reasonable timeline. Okay, so if you're doing that with a 26-year-old player, your narrow path has gotten narrower. But at least there's a shot that you're as good as you are now when that player is 27 and a half, 28.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing it with a 32-year-old player, by the time you've done everything you need to do to replace the guy you lost, from a talent perspective, he's 33, 34. It's like 33 and a half, 34 years old. Well, what side of that coin makes sense for a team and what side doesn't?
Especially because even you're not even factoring in age related decline in that. You know what I mean? Where it's like that's so it's not as if the player is staying just as impactful necessarily, or you can't bet on it anyways. You'd have to make up for that deficit as well. And then you're having to bring in the extra talent from the deal you make. So it's just extremely difficult to do. And as you said, it is just kind of common sense. And that, I think a lot of people have said that from the beginning. You can be as frustrated as you want with Elias Pettersson's play, and it's very, very, very warranted. If you're choosing between the 26-year-old and the 31-year-old, though, it's not open and shut just because of the age, I guess, but it's pretty close. That age is a huge, huge variable here. And as you said, maybe that matches some of what the organization is thinking here as well. So,
yeah, and I mean,
is it impossible?
He's 31, but he turns 32 in a month and a half here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so we're talking 18 months from now. We're talking about a guy who's nearly 34 by the time you get to this, you know, that point. It's not about the players. Like, it's just how you have to think if you're thinking globally about where a team's positioned and what has to come next for them. A world where you deal Pettersson but not Miller doesn't make a ton of sense. A world where you do the opposite does. A world where you do both, I also think, could make sense.
And this text comes in from Billy and Nanaimo, Besser and Garland had no problem moving on and rebuilding their trade value, but age is a huge factor there as well. And as we talk about the risks of letting this drag on, that's another element of the risk, is JT Miller's in that dangerous area for a pro athlete.
Those guys were mid-20s, you know, with contracts that had 2 or 3 years left on them. These guys are, you know, I mean, Pettersson's mid-20s, Miller is not, and the amount of term left on both. I mean, is this year one for Pettersson? We've got 7.5 years left on his contract. We've got, what, 6.5 for Miller? I mean, these contracts exist in different universes because the caliber of players that Pettersson and Miller can be, from positional value standpoint, from like 100-point ceiling standpoint, are materially different. I mean, as our long-term listeners will know, like, I love speculating in the value of second-line, you know, like fringe first line, second line wingers, because I think they vacillate massively year to year.
Mm-hmm.
Centermen like Pettersson and Miller, man, like that those are different animals entirely on the NHL trade market, and in terms of how NHL teams think about building, you know, winning teams.
I wanted to read a couple of good texts that came in. This one from Tatiana in Langley. I was talking about the risk associated with holding Miller for too long. And she says, the risk of holding the player for a significant amount of time is getting cross-checked in the face.
Yep.
That's a good point.
Well done,
that's
Tatiana.
What happens when you hold on to a player for too long. And I liked this one from J-Rock in the Okanagan as well. I don't care if we win another game all year. I want 60 cents. So J-Rock is drawing the line. He'll take 60 cents on the dollar, not a cent less, not a penny less than that. Don't come at him with these 50 cent on the dollar takes. He's drawing the line at 60 cents on the dollar.
Sorry, Carolina.
Yeah, no, you're out. You're absolutely out. All right, 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We will talk to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN. Get his takes on all of this on the other side here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Very lively today in the Dunbar Lumber text line. Appreciate all the texts coming in. And now joining us to chat about the Canucks, the matchup with the Oilers tonight, other things happening around the NHL from ESPN, he is Greg Wyshynski. Wish, what's going on, man?
It's good to have a proper rivalry back in our lives.
Yeah.
I think between the playoffs and what happened earlier this week, it's there's a little bit. We've long had to just depend on our friends in Florida for good team versus team rivalries, and now we've got another one, and it's exciting.
So this is being pitched as, you know, the rematch after a fiery affair and suspensions, and what are there going to be fireworks? But I was saying earlier, it feels like the thinnest example of that I can remember because, okay, McDavid cross-checked a guy in the face, Myers cross-checked a guy in the face. They're not in this game. They both got appropriately suspended by the league. Like, who's supposed to be taking revenge on who or getting extracurricular
physical?
Yeah,
what's the code say about holding, Wish?
I don't know. I mean, you know, okay. Doesn't Connor Garland in his history have someone literally throwing a helmet at him because he's been such a pain in the keister? You know, I think there's always room for some delusional retribution in the NHL that has, you know, no bearing in fact. But just overall, I mean, it's the intensity of the thing. It's the way things went down at the end of that game. It's the fact that it is, a divisional rivalry and everything else. Like, there's definitely going to be heat. But, I mean, I'm with you ultimately. Like, I was doing my Tuesday bit with Jeff Merrick on his show, and like Merrick's like, there's going to be a line brawl, and I'm like, you out of your mind? Like, I would be very surprised if off the hop, you know, it's all hands on deck, and we're going to throw down off the face off. But who knows? Like, this league is so silly in the way that teams process retribution for perceived grievances. So let's see how it shakes out tonight.
We were saying what we want to see is like Darnell Nurse sits on Connor Garland for 7 seconds on the very first shift. We think that would be the best eye for an eye that the Oilers could bring to the table tonight.
And then true to form, no penalty is called.
Yes.
Which, again,
oh, of course.
That's still the funniest part about that whole situation at the end of the game on Saturday was that Connor Garland didn't get a holding penalty. Like, Connor McDavid is literally wearing him as a belt at the end of that game, and Connor Garland didn't get a holding penalty for it. It's crazy.
Maybe the refs can, like, symbolically call a really soft holding penalty on Connor Garland, and everyone, and then we can move on. They'll be like, all right, hey, it's a makeup
stars
call.
Stars protected!
We're protecting his stars. There protected. We go. He put his glove on your shoulder. That's a holding call.
I think you're one game too late, because they did give the Oilers a full two-minute power play against the Capitals earlier this week. They ended the game on the power play. I said to my friend while I was watching the game, I'm like, if I could have put money on the Oilers having a significant power play late in the third period after all the McDavid stuff, I would have definitely dropped money on that, because it was going to happen. And lo and behold, they had a 6-on-4 chance. They couldn't convert, but they had the chance, and that's the point.
Wish, we've been having fun, certainly, this week. I mean,
speak just, for yourself.
Well, no, I mean, not the whole discourse, but kind of marveling at what's come out of Edmonton, because it does feel pretty one-sided, and there's the statement, and there's you know, some of the, let's call them zany media suggestions about what Connor McDavid should do in response. Were you at all surprised by the level of reaction to McDavid getting suspended 3 games? I was at first, but then I guess in retrospect, retrospect, it's the best player in the game, the star of the league, getting suspended. It's kind of always going to be a big deal, I guess. But I wasn't quite ready for just the level of consternation from Edmonton on this one.
Was I surprised by the level of vitriol and delusion coming out of the Edmonton media? we're gonna have to raise the bar pretty high for me to clear that level of surprise. From an objective standpoint, first of all, I thought he deserved two. I thought Myers deserved two. I didn't think three for either of them was really the right decision. I don't see too much difference between what McDavid did and what Matthews did and what Carson Soucy did in the playoffs, where both of those, I mean, the one playoff game equals two regular season game formula, notwithstanding, I think both those were two. And so I thought they would get them both out of the next game and then this game, and then that would be it. So I can understand why they were a little upset about the extra game given to McDavid within their minds. But again, like, I understand also just, you know, the nature of the beast. He reacts the way he reacts because he's getting mauled by an opponent and without any call coming from the officials. And there's always this perception in Edmonton that McDavid doesn't get the calls. I think the stats bear out that he's gotten more calls, more penalties drawn than any other player during his career. Although if you go inside the numbers on a per 60 basis, he's in the top 10, but not at the apex of it. And then, you know, this season, both him and Nathan MacKinnon, who both usually get the benefit of the doubt, are outside the top 50 in players that have drawn the most penalties for guys to play at least 15 minutes a night. So that's kind of a weird flex by the refs. But I get why it happened. But again, you know, we're talking about one of the absolute most powder keg nutbag media markets in the NHL when it comes to problems with officiating or we're not getting respect and yada yada yada. And so,
right, which one are you talking about?
I was going to say, and Edmonton.
I've lost track. Yeah.
You guys are fine. In fact, I'm talking about Edmonton. But in fact, like, how does Tyler Myers feel about all this? Like, you know, no statement from the Canucks about his suspension.
Yeah, they didn't have his back.
Nobody in the Vancouver media threatening that Tyler Myers, had he been named to Team Canada, would not participate in Four Nations. Like,
where's
all the Tyler Myers torch carriers?
Sorry, Tyler Myers announced that he's not going to participate in the Four Nations. He's made that very clear.
But I think also, by the way, on that, it's just like, you know, I'm sure that there are people around Connor who are upset about this. And you know, when you start to see some messaging being put out by members of the media, you wonder where it's coming from. And I don't think that Connor's going to boycott anything. I don't think he's going to do anything that's going to be like, I'm not going to work with the league on promotions and things of that nature. But it's clear that people were upset about the way things went down and wanted to at least make an inkling of that upsetness get out there.
That quadruple patty Big Mac better come off the shelves, McDonald's. So, Wish, what do you make of the other big discussion point in Vancouver at the moment? And to be clear, I actually think the Garland McDavid thing has more been like a Nelson Muntz haha Edmonton, which has been like a welcome distraction from the perpetually lit tire fire that has become this Vancouver Canucks season. What do you make of what's gone on, where the Canucks are at, and what comes next?
I mean, what comes next is probably a JT Miller trade based on everything that we've heard and everything that we've seen and knowing what the landscape looks like for them going forward with this toxicity around the team. I'm intrigued by, you know what I'm most intrigued by, and maybe Drance, you could speak to this, because I have a theory. My theory is that he only wants to play the Rangers, and that all of this discussion about the Devils and Carolina and people bringing up Dallas and maybe Colorado and places like that, I think that's all in service of Vancouver hoping and praying the Rangers come to the table with more than what they came with the first time. What do you think about that?
I certainly think that's a possibility. There's something about this that does feel increasingly like the Rangers are in the driver's seat. Just like in general terms. And yet, you know, how do you square that with the fact that it was the Rangers that pulled out of the deal?
Well, first of all, it could be a motorcycle is what I'm trying to say. Like, it may not even be there. There might not even be other seats in the car for this negotiation. I mean, I think, you know, from the inklings that we've gotten from some of these reports, and I think you've been part of them, is this idea that the Rangers, you know, didn't want to put a certain condition on their pick. You know, I think
or the retained salary transaction thing that Saravalli reported.
That too, and then Elliot actually, I think Friedman had a different configuration of the trade, and there's not being a defenseman involved in the deal. So there's a lot kind of like floating around about why this thing fell apart, why it didn't come together, and all that stuff. But I mean, the bottom line is that, you know, the Canucks have to get something back for this guy. You know, and they can't simply just like ship him out because he's a problem, because he is. You know, despite the no movement clause really kind of limiting your market, you've got to be able to replace him in the lineup with something. And Hedl's I think Hedl's an interesting player in the sense that if he's given a greater opportunity with another team than he's had in New York, he's been behind Zibanejad and Trocheck on the depth chart now for a couple seasons. He could really thrive, but I do think the injury concern is a legitimate one going forward with him. You got to make sure you've got enough back to either, you know, make the current incarnation of the team still as good, or do something that's going to help you sort of retool into what the next incarnation of the team is going to be. And that's really tough when the trade market for a guy is this limited, to the point where, you know, you and I suspect there's a possibility it could be one team. That's tough.
If that is the case, and, you know, who knows, but as you say, like, it certainly seems like it's pointing in the direction of the New York Rangers. At what point do the Canucks just have to bite the bullet and get to the table and get a deal done? Because that's kind of what I've been saying, Wish, is this, like, they got this game against Edmonton, and yeah, there's some hype around it, but the games almost feel beside the point right now, because the team is just kind of in limbo waiting for the other shoe to drop, and I just don't know how much appetite the team should have for letting that atmosphere continue. So look, I agree, if you can't give them away for a seventh round pick or anything like that, there's some baseline of value you have to meet. But there's also a certain point where you need just to have the clarity and the ability to move forward.
Yeah, and that's why I wish we could, you know, be a fly on the wall or climb inside the head of Patrick Alvin being John Malkovich style, because I don't know how he views this team. And I don't know how the rest of management and ownership view this team. They're on the bubble. I mean, I would say in the Western Conference right now, their spot, that second wild card spot in the West, is the most precarious, and maybe the only one that's up in the air at this point. And so, you know, do they view this team as one where they need to keep the train rolling towards a playoff spot and be good this year and have a chance to succeed in the playoffs? Can you do that without JT Miller? Is this a necessary evil you have to suffer through to make sure that Elias Pettersson is still happy, content, and positive and playing well going forward under a very long-term contract and being a much younger player? Like, these are all very, very interesting questions that all point to, is this about the present or is it about the future? And if it's about the future, what is the right configuration of this deal that's going to benefit this team to retool around what I think is a really talented core, if they don't believe that this current group is worth kind of saving this season?
Yeah. And look, I think there's a sense internally that the Canucks did, you know, they'd position this team hoping that they'd be a contender by this point in the year, and certainly are a little bit blindsided by the fact that it's come to this. You know, I do think there's some disappointment. Everything they'd done had been to sort of support this core group. Do you know, the Vancouver has a talented core thing. I mean, we've been doing it forever, and they made the playoffs two of the last 6 years since it really all came together. And there's been various configurations, Bo Horvat out, Philip Peronikin, whatever. But at some point, you know, especially this time out where you've got the coach, you know, you've got the supporting cast, especially up front. When do we have to reexamine that, Wish?
How long you've got the coach? I mean, that to me was the most fascinating thing from Alvin's press conference.
Agreed.
The idea that they have the team option and it's a two-way street. And, you know, you combine that with some of the reporting that's been out there about, you know, Tocchet and his future, and you're just, it gives you pause for a second to be like, okay, how bad is the situation in Vancouver, where all of a sudden a guy that you expected was going to coach there for 6 or 7 years may not, depending on how things shake out. I don't know. Like, I think when your starting point is Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson, even if maybe, I mean, I don't know if you can or can't count Datchardenko as part of that group anymore with the way things have gone from health-wise. Like, I think that's still a really good starting point. And, and you know, one of the things about the JT Miller trade that's probably underrated is that you are going to get out of a contract that goes on for quite a while for a player that is going to age out of it. And so, you know, with that flexibility, you can be maybe a little bit more creative. It's hard, obviously, to retool in this league, but it is a hell of a starting point if Pettersson could be Pettersson without the toxicity of the situation surrounding him at all times. And then you know what you have in Quinn. Like, you can kind of find your way forward, but it may take a step back before you take a leap forward. And that's really kind of the question for the organization now if they look down the barrel of a very difficult trade they have to make.
I don't want to get you too excited as a lifelong New Jersey Devils fan, but one thing that I think you have to bear in mind here is the dynamic of the fact that Quinn Hughes becomes extension eligible in 18 months himself, right? The team might be able to take something of a step back for the rest of the season, but next year is pretty crucial proving ground given the options that Quinn Hughes will have, not just in terms of being like the highest paid defenseman ever if he wants to be, but, you know, a couple family members playing on a contending team out east too.
Well, I appreciate you acknowledging the Unite the Triforce theory of the Hughes brothers, that at some point they'll all play on the same team. No, that's a very salient point and an important one to keep in mind, because you do have, obviously, you know, Jack and Luke on the Devils, and as the Devils progress with their own cap situation towards that season, I mean, you're going to have money becoming available, I think, as well as I got to check how many years Dougie still has on his contract with them, but I'm sure he's already played a few of those contract years. I wonder if it syncs up to what when Quinn might become free. No, that's a fair point, and it's something to consider. I mean, I know what you're saying is like you want this team to be going in the right direction when it becomes time for him to commit long term, and you know that's going to be certainly a consideration.
I think Dougie Hamilton has one more year on his deal than Quinn Hughes, so it doesn't quite perfectly line up. They'll have to find a way out of that one.
If only there was a way to make that disappear. I wonder if they could figure.
If only, I'm sure they could.
To do that, if it meant getting Quinn Hughes.
I'm sure they'll look into that, I'm sure. You mentioned the Canucks on the playoff bubble right now. I know you had a piece up at ESPN looking at kind of bubble watch in both conferences. I mean, we'll start in the West. So of the teams really competing with the Canucks for that second wild card spot, Calgary's holding it down right now. St. Louis, who's playing a lot better under new coach Jim Montgomery, and then Utah as well. Who are you buying from that group to potentially claim that second wild card spot?
I'm selling on Calgary. I've been selling on them all year. I still think they're on fraud watch. I think they've had their bacon saved by a great young goalie for most of this season, and I don't think at the end of the day they're going to make the playoffs, and I think at the end of the day they're going to really regret being bubble adjacent versus being deep in the lottery, which is where they should be right now as a franchise. Utah is an interesting one because ever since Connor Ingram came back from his injury and some personal issues involving the unfortunate passing of his mother last month, he's played pretty well. And if you can get him and Vemelka going at the same time, that Utah team probably needs to locate a little bit more offense beyond their top guys, but if they're able to do it, they could maybe make a move in the West. St. Louis is just like a tough one to figure. They could probably grind out a playoff spot under Montgomery, and I think there's some really interesting developments based on how Jake Neighbors has played for the last 2 years, based on how Dylan Holloway has played this season for them after the RFA thing with the Oilers. Like, he's been everything that they hoped he'd be after
he's a monster.
That offer sheet. So they're an interesting team, and then you know, on the bubble watch, we give the playoff odds for the probabilities for teams. And Stathletes still has the Nashville Predators with a very decent chance of qualifying for the playoffs, which I know mathematically makes no sense, but at the end of the day, this is still a team that showed us last year they can get on a roll. They've won a few in a row right now. They've done all of this with Uzi Soros being below average this year. They're still a team you can't necessarily count out for that last spot. They're not catching anybody in the Central. But if they could put 3 weeks together of good hockey, they might have a spitting distance chance of trying to make that final wild card spot.
I'm Team Utah, Wish. I think Utah's by far the best team in that mix, and I include the Canucks with or without JT Miller.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for it. I don't know. Like, the Canucks are still just so frustrating. I mean, they literally are the only team in this league that could have that kind of win against Edmonton and then blow that kind of lead against Buffalo on home ice. Like, that's Vancouver. that's them in a nutshell this year.
Yep.
Utah is just tough, like I said, because I think they're going to have the goaltending. They definitely have, with Keller and Cooley and Gunther and others, some really impressive offensive firepower this year. Their depth is just not a playoff quality depth overall. But you might be right at the end of the day. They might be the team that if they can score enough and rely on what I think is one of the better goaltending tandems in the league, if Ingram's got his head straight again, then they could be the one that ultimately makes the cut, which is great news for an organization that could use some good news, because apparently they can't use the name Yeti based on all the trademark stories I've read this week, where Yeti or Yetis is going to be a tough nut to crack from a U.S. trademark perspective.
I see. I think that's a flash of good luck. Utah Hockey Club is what they should be called, and they'd be lucky to have their trademark attempts fail.
I saw that got rejected as a trademark too.
What?
Utah Hockey Club. Okay. Yeah, I have to double check that, but yeah, I'm pretty sure that got rejected as well, which is wild.
Look, you gotta just rely on your recent history. I mean, the ultimate solution for your team, if you can't name your team the thing you want to name it, is just become the Golden Yeti. and that'll clear all the trademark issues that you might have. As Vegas is,
throw an adjective in there, differentiated there itself a little bit. Yeah. Out east, playoff picture much more crowded than in the west, and both wildcard spots really up for grabs. What's your kind of gut telling you about how that one shakes out?
Well, you know, as one of many people that wrote an obit for the Rangers earlier this year, they'll be a playoff team, obviously.
Do you actually think so?
No, they're making it.
Oh, once they
they're
get the JT Miller it, boost, yeah. Are you kidding?
Who are they better than?
Well, their goaltending is better than anybody in the bubble race.
Sure.
I don't like them at 5-on-5. That's why I think ultimately they are going to retool, whether it's at the deadline or in the summer. But, you know, their power play and what the top two lines on that team can generate, I think, are going to be enough. And more importantly, like, they're putting it together a little bit now. Laviolette has been playing very defensive, like very kind of collapse in your own zone sort of defensively right now. And I think he recognizes that might be the only path to victory with how deficient they are at 5-on-5. But like, who do you trust more than them to make the playoffs in that mix? Like, Ottawa, I guess when Omar comes back, they should be all right. But I don't trust Detroit, and I don't trust the Flyers, and I don't trust Montreal, and I certainly don't trust Pittsburgh or the Islanders. I mean, Columbus is a great story, and I hope that it continues, but ultimately their goaltending is not going to be what it's been for the last couple of weeks as they've made this run. So I think the Rangers are the logical choice.
Wish, always appreciate it, man. We'll see if this game tonight in Edmonton is spicy or just another bizarre one for the Vancouver Canucks. Thanks for doing this.
Fireworks. Hopefully Bill Daly's in the building to talk to both teams beforehand about what could go down in this blood feud, but I'll definitely be tuning
in. I just love the NHL like coming in to address them and the guys being like, what are you talking about? What is that? What do you expect us to do here?
Exactly.
Thank you, Wish.
All right, boys.
That is Greg Wyshynski from ESPN weighing in on the JT Miller saga, the rematch with the Oilers, and another voice there chiming in saying he thinks it is going to be eventually, at some point, the New York Rangers for JT Miller. I don't even know what to say if it doesn't happen at this point. The number of Chris Drury loves this player reports stretching back years is overwhelming. You got to think it's going to happen at some point, but who knows? Maybe we'll be doing this update over and over and over again all into the summer.
I feel like we've been doing it the entire length of our show.
Almost. We took a break last year. That was nice. No, there were no JT Miller trade.
There were no
zero.
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 You're right.
But that's it. That's the only year.
That was weird.
It was refreshing.
Was it?
Oh, really? You wanted to get into it?
No. I you know what? I mean, it is the ultimate Charlie Brown tries to kick the football for Canucks fans and media and JT Miller.
That's why I've said
JT Miller's agent.
And I'm fully prepared to be wrong about this, but that's why I'm still in I'll believe it when I see it mode. Yeah, how can you not be?
No, how can you not be?
Really?
It would be very silly to be like, This time it'll be simple.
And like I take the reporting you and Rick Dhaliwal are doing seriously, and there's obviously a ton of reporting out there that all points to it being very, very, very serious and really happening this time. And yeah. I get that. I'm not saying any of it is wrong or incorrect. It's just I'll believe it when I see it.
Certainly teams around the league expect this to happen sooner than later.
All right. And they're always right about things, right? Anyways. We'll take a break here. We'll hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet in the next segment. Canucks did their game day skate in Edmonton today before facing the Oilers. So we'll see. I mean, he had some very interesting things to say yesterday after the team practiced. We'll see what he has to say today. We'll read some of your texts as well. Get him into the inbox. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. It is Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here, live from the Kintec studio on a Canucks game day. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Canucks game day, 6 o'clock start against the Edmonton Oilers. Of course, Batch and Randeep on the call pregame with Sat and Dan. Postgame with Sat and Bick, all right here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Yeah, before we get to the rest of the show, we'll have a chance to dive back into the inbox as well. Again, lots of good texts coming in today. Let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
No, Myers or McDavid, of course, but how do you capitalize on that?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's huge for us. I mean, the guy's the best player in the league. And for us, Mizey's a big minute guy. He's had a really good year for us. So, you know, we need a committee of defense to make up for him. So, yeah.
You've been really upfront and honest about your feelings of what you've seen recently here, Rick. What's the hope and the expectation of the way the group responds given a chance here?
Well, it's just, you know, you can't, you know, we talked about good game, bad game, good, like you have to have consistency in your game. That's urgency. You know, we need a little bit more urgency from people. We know that, but we got to stop saying it. Now it's action, right? And we know that there's 5 feet out there that we can get, and we have to demand that 5 feet. I think that's really in our game. There's a lot of good stuff that's happened, but there's a lot of stuff that obviously that's self-inflicted that we got to turn the tables on. So there's no, you know, you got to start tonight. There's no other way to say it.
Quinn Hughes, as good as he was last year, seems to have elevated his game this year. What have you seen in his game that has taken him to a new level?
Well, if you talk about his consistency, he does it every night.
Yeah.
You know, very rarely has an off night. When he gets that puck, he's going north. He's either skating it or he's making a play north. There's no indecision in his game.
Yeah.
You know, he takes upon himself to he almost wants to carry the team on his back.
Yeah.
You got to be careful of that because he can't do it alone. But he has that mentality. The way he trains or the way his mindset, his days off, the way he works his body, like everything's about trying to make himself better. So I have a lot of respect for that kid.
How does that translate to the rest of the team when they see a guy this good work this hard?
Well, I hope it translates. Like, you know, you want to do that. I'm sure you can look at a guy like McDavid with Edmonton. He inspires a lot of teammates. You know, you need players to inspire each other, and Hughes does that.
When you see Pod Coles in here playing a regular role and a regular, I mean, sometimes just a change of scenery can really help a guy. What do you see out of him this year?
Yeah, I actually talked to Koff about this when we traded him. I called Koff, said he's a great kid. I see a lot of you know, creativity. He gets to play with some great players that probably demands himself to be more creative, but I think he's a power forward. He's got a good shot. I'm sure they think there's another level. I've really enjoyed watching him play. Like, he's really done a nice job. You root for a kid like that, too. He's a great kid.
Same lineup tonight. Who's in goal?
Goals are going to be Demmer, and then whether Carlson goes in or not, I'm not quite sure. Same defense, though.
Okay. You've had us in the media. We love lots of drama because it sells papers. You've had more than your share, I'm sure, as a head coach. Do you spend? Does it get exhausting?
No, but I got to be careful because sometimes you spend too much on certain, and you forget about the other people, right? There's other players got to be coached too, so it's important that you got to pick and choose. But you know what? Whether it's drama or unfortunate things that happen, you become stronger as a team. The adversity. You know, I've been lucky to be involved with three Stanley Cup teams, and there's always been some confrontation in those years. There's been something, and you can talk to any Stanley Cup champion. It's never easy, so we're just getting a little bit more of our share, so can we come out of it stronger? That's the way I look at it. Is there a positive out of this adversity?
Vince DeRene back in his old stomping grounds. Just want to know what you've seen from him this year.
I think he's improved the last two, 3 weeks, I think, early on. He struggled a little bit. I think the last two, three weeks, I think his game's coming. Moving his feet, good stick. So yeah, he's starting to come.
Is it good in a long? Like it's a long schedule, and there's a lot of nights where, you know, guys are playing. But tonight, when you get Edmonton, there's a playoff history. There's stuff. Everyone's a little bit more juice in this game. Yeah. Is it good for a coach to have a little more of that?
Yeah, I'm glad we're playing this, especially after our Buffalo game. I think this is, we need this. I you know, you got to play 82 games, but you got to embrace it as a player. You want to play in these games. You want to play in a heated rival. Like, who wants to play in a, you know, non-hit back in like a, you know, a nothing game? Like, that's those games suck. You know, April, you're out of the playoffs. I mean, these are the games you play hockey for. Like, this is a great game to coach, a great game to play.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet, and he's trying to get hyped for this one tonight. He's buying in that maybe there's a little extra spice, or at least trying to use that potentially as a motivating factor with his players, as he said, especially in light of their dreary performance in the Buffalo game earlier this week on Tuesday. So Rick Tocchet hoping that maybe there's some extra fireworks in this one.
Also hoping that he can use his time a little differently in terms of spreading around the attention to different players.
That's the quote that stands out.
That
the
is
most. Can't spend
wildly
too, and it's directly in response. I think it was Speck asking him the question about just the drama and it getting to him. And he's, yeah, it can be a lot, and you can't spend too much time on certain guys. Sometimes you forget about the other players. They need coaching too. Look, one of the big conversations we've been having today is the value of moving quickly versus holding as long as you can on the asset and trying to get the best return. And I think that speaks to the value of moving quickly, is being able to operate more closely to a normal team where the coach doesn't feel like all of his time and all of his effort and all of his coaching is going to a couple of players trying to solve those issues constantly.
Right, yeah. And to actually, like, hockey stuff.
Yeah.
As opposed to relationship management stuff, right? I mean, God, it's got to be so exhausting.
It certainly sounds like it.
I mean, I know it's a lot of work for you when you have to do it here.
let me tell you.
With Dom. Mostly with Dom. Not as much with me.
The number of people the week you were away and I was doing the show solo, a number of people are like, how's it doing solo for a week? I was like, not as bad as you think, actually. That's a nice change of pace sometimes. Yeah. I don't know. It's good to have you back.
I'll go away again. It's fine.
No, it's fine. But especially for Tocchet, not just pouring so much of your effort into a couple of players, possibly at the expense of some other guys on the roster, but as you say, for non-hockey things, you know, it's not even like, oh, I'm really trying to get this guy to understand what he needs to do in the defensive zone. You know what I mean? It's not even that. It's just, as you say, relationship management, non-hockey stuff. That's not like, yes, Rick Tocchet was hired partly because he's a really good communicator and he's good at relating to the players. And we've seen evidence of that. You know, I mean, think back to last year. There's times, right, where he's out there with the scratches on the road, helping them get their extra work in so he can build that relationship, so he can get some face time with them. We've seen evidence of that from Rick Tocchet. So, yeah, that's part of his toolkit. That's part of the reason the organization wanted to hire him. But that's not the only thing you want him doing. That's not the only thing you want him doing. You want him doing hockey stuff.
Well, especially, you know, given the size of his portfolio, given the struggles on the power play, given all the hockey stuff and attention that this team needs, given their performance over the course of the year, the fact that there's been any wasted moments, you know, doing effectively, like, and this is for lack of a better word more than anything, but babysitting, you know, that's not conducive to winning.
No.
This league's too hard for that.
It's not conducive to winning. It's not conducive to moving forward at all. And, you know, a bunch of people have texted in along the lines of, you have to, whatever decision you're making with JT Miller and Elias Pettersson has to at least partly be done in the context of Quinn Hughes and his future with the team. And I think that's fair. I think that's absolutely fair to say we have to filter what we're doing right now through the question of how does this impact our chances of re-signing Quinn Hughes? But that doesn't just mean, okay, you can't take too much of a loss on the JT Miller trade. It also means, again, it speaks to the need to be functioning more like a normal team in a hurry. Start that process as soon as you can. Remove the circumstances that are causing Rick Tocchet to feel like he's spending way too much of his time on a couple of guys. That's going, you got to think that's going to feel awesome for Quinn Hughes to have that situation dealt with at some point. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Tarek in Kingston says, come on, Jamie, getting an optimal return is the most important thing, period. You don't sell for cents on the dollar just to calm the waters. Tocchet can work through it. Give me a break. Oh, Tocchet, I'm sure, can work through it, but at what effectiveness? How long are you willing to take that hit that you're getting? You're not getting the most out of the rest of your team. You're not getting the most out of your coach and your coaching staff, if that is indeed the case with this situation, and certainly seems to be based on what we just heard from Rick Tocchet. And also, what's the optimal return?
Well, also, if this was something that Tocchet can just handle,
wouldn't it be done?
Yeah. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, if this was no big deal and Tockett's got it, feels like we wouldn't be having this conversation whatsoever. No, is that, am I off base?
No, I think you're probably right.
Like, I think it's something that can't be mended, obviously. Look, if this organization felt like, if Rutherford and Alvin felt like a change of coach would get them working and all pulling on the same direction, on the rope in the same direction, they'd fire the coach.
Yeah.
Like, if they thought it was about a goaltender, they'd be looking for a goaltender. If they thought it was the puck-moving D, I think they'd be after a puck-moving D.
Which they have been at times.
Totally. But if they thought that it would, like, if they thought
that then
that was
all they'd be doing. Yeah.
I'm just saying, if they thought this was a hockey issue, they would be taking an approach as if they thought it was a hockey issue.
Yep.
You know, like, I don't know what else to say. Like, they're not trying to fix a hockey problem, clearly, because they're not even looking. I mean, it's not that they're not even looking. It's like they're looking for the best hockey trade they can find to fix what's clearly like a personality issue, a human issue within the team.
And I do think it's telling, again, as I was saying, Rick Tocchet was brought in not just for the structure and the X's and O's. He was brought in for his talent as a relationship manager, his ability to connect to the players, his ability to build rapport and, you know, earn trust and earn buy-in. And I think he's demonstrated that. That was part of his reputation. Think back to all the reports from, you know, how he was able to connect with Phil Kessel in Pittsburgh, the relationship he had with Sidney Crosby and Malkin and Chris Letang running their power play. That was a big deal. So I think the fact that it's beyond Tocchet's ability to fix, or it seems to be beyond Tocchet's ability to mend, that should tell you a lot about how significant the situation is, how serious it is from management's perspective. This text comes in from JB. What Tocchet said that really stands out is about inspiring other players. He said McDavid inspires other players on his team. My criticism of Pettersson is not only is he not living up to his contract, but as the highest paid player, is he inspiring anyone else on the Canucks? I personally think he does not. And if not, if I was on the team, I'd be like, he gets paid the most. And he's not lifting us up. And I think that's a very fair point about Elias Pettersson. And really, you've heard, you know, when Rick Tocchet, he's glowing about Quinn Hughes in that press media availability, as he has so often. And you're starting to hear more, though, of other guys should be living up to the standard that Quinn Hughes is setting. You know, that's becoming kind of a subtext in a lot of what Rick Tocchet is saying about Quinn Hughes. Even in the comments about him trying to do too much, it's almost implicit, like, because maybe not everyone else is pulling their weight. I can't tell you why Elias Pettersson hasn't been able to have that impact on the team, or doesn't appear to be having that impact on the team. But look, as much as we're talking about trading JT Miller and trying to
solve whatever issues are in the room through that avenue. And it seems to be what the team is trying to do. It is what the team is trying to do. Like, make no mistake, Elias Pettersson needs to be way, way better on the ice. And I think the texture makes a good point. He's got to get something close to the level of leadership and leading by example that Quinn Hughes is attaining as well. That you need that from your best players.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I don't know how much the injury played a role with it, but like, Pettersson's quick, but the speed part of his game has never really come. And most pro scouts I talk to, like the people who can actually diagnose skating mechanics, have always felt like it was a core strength issue. You know, that's the sort of thing where, you know, and he's now 26, right? I mean, part of the logic of being high on Pettersson is like, well, what happens when he's 26
and he's strong
put on, and he's put on 30 pounds of muscle and on and on. And again, you know, given that we know that he had sort of tendonitis in his knee, maybe we cut him some slack. But at some point, you'd like to see him add the step in the same sort of way. Like, you know, the Twins found that guy, Salmonson. I think his name's Salmonson. I'll check my transcripts because I've done an interview with him. But he's literally like a scientist who changed their stride and specifically had them skating, leaning forward to like better take advantage of gravity.
There's always just something funny about describing somebody as a scientist to me.
This guy's like a scientist.
It's like from a Richard Scarry book. It's like, that's not a real, no one's just scientist. That's what it says on his business card.
Skating scientist who is like, you must fall from your belly buttons, Twins. I'm serious. He's got like a kid who's a coach. Anyway, I can't remember his name right now, but my point being, like, there's that level, that extra level of work that you know, the great ones put in, that Quinn Hughes put in with Daryl Belfry to revamp his shot, to change up his method of attacking. Like, you've seen Quinn Hughes do that. I mean, Pettersson is one of the most skilled, intelligent players I've seen. He hasn't had the same level of juice this year. He hasn't had it for 12 months. But one thing I'd say is, I mean, what's different in Pettersson's game? What's an area of Pettersson's game that he's improved on since his rookie season?
I don't know. What was his face-off number?
Yeah, that's probably it.
Face-offs?
But, yeah. Okay.
Like, killing penalties, I guess?
I guess. He was always smart, though. Yeah. Like, he was always a good... His anticipation, like... I'm just saying, in terms of that strength side, that preparation side, you know, and I think there's a sense of that internally. That, like, there's another level that guys like Quinn Hughes have hit in terms of their preparation and off-season work that Pettersson hasn't yet. Well, he's 26 now, man.
Yeah.
So, I understand why... You know, like talking about the framing it as inspiring your teammates, I think that's dead fair, dead right. Now, I'd add this, though. One other thing is, you know, Hughes was made captain, right? Hughes has been empowered, I think, in a pretty different way, right? This team has had a different voice in the room leading and you know, from what we hear, clashing relatively repeatedly with Pettersson. A guy who's a far bigger personality takes up far more oxygen. You know, does that hold development back in terms of developing that inspiring side? I don't know. I'm just asking the question, but I think it's worth asking.
Yep.
And not even asking in like a pointed way, just asking in terms of like, if this plays out as we sort of expect it to at this point, as it's trending toward playing out, where JT Miller leaves the organization at some point in the next, you know, couple months. You know, a lot of the conversation is going to turn to like, well, what about the pressure on Pettersson now in the market? And that's fair.
I think it's extremely fair. At least in the short term.
But what about the pressure on Pettersson internally to fill some of that gap?
Well, also the pressure. Look, who knows how much of this is just about their dynamic, right? Versus a more team-wide sort of thing.
Yeah, but
there's going to at least be the perception that, okay, hey, the roadblocks are out of the way. Now it is time. We've paid you. The roadblocks are out of the way. You're a big part of this leadership group. You have to take those next steps, what you're talking about. The work ethic, getting better, improving, inspiring your teammates, being a real part of the leadership core, having that real winning desire and demonstrating it. Like, it's it's not the last chance because he's signed to an 8-year deal, but it's going to kind of feel like it's the last chance to really step up and demonstrate that kind of thing. And, you know, the internal perception is a fascinating question as well, because there's going to be, like, let's say they trade JT Miller next week. All right. And then let's say Elias Pettersson gets on a heater for the rest of the season. Looks like the old Elias Pettersson. Well, obviously, there'll be a lot of fans that are thrilled that, hey, okay, but that was tough to trade JT, but this guy's playing really well. But isn't there going to be a part of you that's kind of like, hey, what the heck, man? You know what I mean? Like, that was it really as simple as you had to trade that? We had to trade this guy so that you would start playing well again? I guess at the end of the day, you're just happy if you get him playing better. But, like, I don't think even that scenario is a good look for Elias Pettersson. If all of a sudden his game completely turns a corner right after they move on from JT Miller, like, that, okay, good, he's playing well, but that just raises questions for me as well if that happens like that. You know what I mean? And I think dressing room, you'd be like, what the heck?
I remember thinking it when they fired Green. And you got, now, it took Pettersson like another month to really get his game in gear, but those first couple of games of Boudreaux, you saw Pettersson, you know, shot like a cannon, and it was like, bud, you might want to tone it down a bit. This is causing me to wonder some pretty pointed stuff.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, look, we don't know the dynamic there well enough, but I do think there's some questions that you know, I think the organization itself will ask in the wake of this, you know, about Pettersson's preparation and sort of hunger to improve, especially in comparison with Quinn. Right, who has it in spades and has done it year after year after year.
I think the pressure thing on Pettersson is very real. I know Bruff has brought this up.
But Bruff's just like wanting to put pressure on Pettersson, so he's just like looking for an excuse.
It's still not a bad point, though.
No, he's not wrong. I'm just saying the messenger's compromised.
But, you know who else had a ton of pressure on them coming in? Was Rick Tocchet. Because of the way the Canucks had moved on from Bruce Boudreaux.
True.
You remember back, it's easy to forget now, but you think back to the text.
He was booed.
The text we were getting, like, how could they do this? You look at his record, this is awful, he's a joke, no way. People were angry about the Boudreaux situation, and they transfer that anger onto Rick Tocchet. But, so yes, there was a lot of pressure, he came into a very difficult situation, but the team started winning and he performed. You know what I mean? He was honest. He was open. He was accountable. He won people over in a hurry. So yes, there will be a lot of pressure on Elias Pettersson to perform, but it's also not insurmountable. It's not like you're salting the earth and he can never, you know, overcome that pressure or win back the doubters in this market. Rick Tocchet's proven it's possible if you perform, if you're helping the team win, if you're living up to the best of your abilities. Okay, quickly, just before we go, how much appetite, if any, do you have for the Podkolzin hindsight discussion? I don't have a lot.
Well, I mean, I've always been a Podkolzin fan.
I just don't think it was going to happen here.
Maybe. I mean, I always said it would be a huge shame to deal him without giving him a predictable role at once for a 50-game stretch. So more than anything, it's not like hindsight in terms of like they shouldn't have traded him. My problem with the Podkolzin thing is this team never charted out a predictable development plan for him across three separate coaches. Like, that to me is the thing that I think it's fair. And this isn't hindsight. I kept saying it. This is exactly the type of guy you bet on. He's so hardworking.
Yep.
I'm leaving the light on for him. Every time Podkolzin came up, I had the same take for what? The entire 3 years. Why isn't the organization carving out an energy fourth line role for this guy? Just go be comfortable. Clearly his confidence is at issue. Just go be comfortable. Go make a difference by hitting and working hard, man, because you will hit and you will work hard. Go have fun out there and let's see where we're at in 50 games. I mean, that's what I just don't understand. Two management teams and three coaches and no one ever gave him just like 50 games, 12 minutes a night.
Yeah, it's almost as if having your organization in constant turmoil takes a toll.
No, but I mean, 2.5 of those years are under this management group.
And they were under they were in turmoil with Bruce Boudreau.
Yeah,
that's not an excuse for that.
No,
it's just
right.
My point is, like, don't be in turmoil. Get out of the turmoil.
You're right.
And that all ties back to what I'm saying about the Miller thing.
I mean, at the end of the day, what? He's gonna have 32 points or something and be a useful middle six guy for the Oilers. And a lot of those that production will come playing with Dreisaitl. I mean, I don't know that you look at it as like a huge missed opportunity. But given that their forward group has lacked some size... I mean, given that, like, Danton Heinen hasn't been what you wanted, I mean, I think it's fair to say that like, this season hasn't gone according to plan. Podkolzin's, like, a symptom of that as opposed to the disease behind it. But the development path, that part, I think you can look back on and just wonder, like, what happened? This was so... Anyway, whatever.
You're getting...
Well, I just... You're like, what about the hindsight on Podkolzin? Do you have time for that? It's like, I'm so annoyed... To have had the same take for 3 years.
All right, we got to go to break. Okay. I was expecting a quick take here. Well, this is the most upset you've been all show.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Not even close.
Well, it's, you know what? The more obvious it is, the more upset it makes me.
All right, we'll not take a break. We'll go to break. We'll finish up here.
We're
end
done.
The show. We are done. It's over. But we'll be back tomorrow for the Friday edition of Canucks Talk here on Sports.
Don't sound too excited, bud.